Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this seminar entitled The One Firm Firm, I will discuss a common approach to firm management and strategy that is used by some of the world's most successful professional businesses. Now, this podcast is based on an article I wrote in 1985, more than 20 years ago. And apart from shortening it a little, I haven't changed the words. It's one of the very few I've written where I talk about specific firms by name. After all this time, I still feel that I chose the correct firms to discuss. All these firms have continued to be extraordinarily successful, retaining their prominent positions, with, however, one name requiring an explanation. You'll hear me refer to Arthur Andersen as an example of an admired, successful firm. In later years, it split into two, the audit firm of Arthur Andersen and the consulting firm that became Accenture. If you accept that Accenture is the true heritage successor to the philosophies I describe here, rather than the audit firm that disappeared in the wake of the Enron scandals, then I don't think I would go back and change much of what I wrote. Here, then, is a description of strategic success that I wrote about more than 20 years ago and that I think has stood the test of time. What do investment bankers Goldman Sachs, management consultants McKinsey, accountants Arthur Andersen, compensations and benefits consultants Hewitt Associates, and lawyers Latham & Watkins have in common? Besides being amongst the most profitable firms, if not the most profitable, in their respective professions. Besides being considered by their peers among the best managed firms in their respective professions. The answer, they all share to a greater or lesser extent a common approach to management that I term the one firm firm system. In contrast to many of their competitors, one firm firms have a remarkable degree of institutional loyalty and group effort. In contrast to many of their competitors who emphasize entrepreneurialism, autonomous profit centers, internal competition, or highly decentralized independent activities, one firm firms place great emphasis on firm-wide coordination of decision-making, group identity, cooperative teamwork, and institutional commitment. Hewitt Associates, described along with Goldman Sachs in a recent popular book as one of the 100 best firms in America to work for, says that in its recruiting, it looks for swans, people who are smart, that's the S, work hard, the W, are ambitious, that's the A, and finally, nice. While emphasis on the first three attributes is common in all professional firms, it is the emphasis on the last one, nice, that differentiates the one firm firm from all the others. Peter Friedes, Hewitt's managing officer, says that if an individual has ego needs that are too high, they can be very disruptive influence. Our work depends upon internal cooperation and teamwork. The same theme is sounded by Jeffrey Boyce, the senior officer in charge of mergers and acquisitions at Goldman Sachs. You learn from day one around here that we gang tackle problems. If your ego won't permit that, you won't be effective here. In contrast to many, if not most, of its competitors on the street, Goldman frowns upon anything resembling a star system. The same studied avoidance of the star mentality is evidenced at Latham & Watkins. And the team philosophy at McKinsey, one senior officer explained to me, is illustrated by its approach to project work. As a young individual consultant, you learn that your job is to hold your own. You can rest assured that the team will win. All you've got to do is do your part. Above all else, the leaders are more important, or the other members of these firms, view themselves as belonging to an institution that has an identity and existence of its own, above and beyond the individuals who happen currently to belong to it. They are only stewards of the firm, not the owners. The one firm firm places great emphasis on its institutional history, broadly held values, and a reputation that all actively work to preserve. Loyalty to and pride in the firm and its accomplishment approaches religious fervor at these firms. In large part, the institutional commitment at one firm firms is generated not only through a loyalty to the firm, but also by a development of a sense of mission. which is most frequently seen as client or customer service. Within McKinsey, a new consultant learns within a very short period of time that the firm believes that the client comes first, the firm second, and the individual last. Goldman Sachs has a reputation for being, quote, ready to sacrifice anything, including its relations with other Wall Street firms, to further the client's interests. The emphasis at one firm firms is clearly of significant attention to managing client relationships, as apart from focusing on transactions and technical excellence, as is common elsewhere. Goldman Sachs pioneered the concept on Wall Street of forming a marketing and new business development group whose primary responsibility was to manage the interface between the client and all the various other parts of Goldman Sachs that provide the technical and professional services. At McKinsey, in the words of one senior officer, here everyone realizes that the client relationship is paramount, not the specific project we happen to be working on at the moment. The high commitment, hard-working, mission-oriented, team-intensive characteristics of one firm firms are reminiscent of another type of organization, the Marine Corps. Indeed, one firm firms have an elite Marine Corps attitude about themselves. An atmosphere of a special private club prevails where members feel that we do things differently around here, and most of us couldn't consider working anywhere else. While all professional firms will assert that they have the best professionals in town, one firm firms claim they have the best firm in town, a subtle but important difference. What management practices have created and sustained this culture? Not surprisingly, since people constitute the vast majority of the productive resources of a professional business, most of these management practices involve people management. In contrast to many competing firms, one firm firms invest a significant amount of senior professional time in their recruitment process, and they tend to be much more selective in hiring than their competition. At one firm firms, recruiting is either highly centralized or well coordinated centrally. At Goldman Sachs, only about 3% of the MBAs that are interviewed there each year are offered jobs. Interviewing likely candidates is a major responsibility of the firm's senior officers. A Goldman partner noted, recruiting responsibilities almost come before your business responsibilities. At Latham & Watkins, all candidates get 25 to 30 interviews, compared to a norm in the legal profession of 5 to 10 interviews. As a McKinsey senior officer noted, in our business, the game is won or lost at the recruiting stage. We take it very seriously, and it's not a quantity game, it's a quality game. You've got to find the best people you can, and the trick is to understand what best means. Some firms hire in a superficial way, relying on the up or out system to screen out the losers. We do have an up or out system, but we don't use it as a substitute for good recruiting practices. One firm firms are notable for their investment in firm-wide training, which serves both as a way to add to the substantive skills of the juniors and as an important group socialization function. The best examples of this practice are Arthur Andersen and McKinsey. The former is renowned amongst accounting students for its training center in St. Charles, Illinois, a fully equipped college campus that the firm acquired and converted to its own uses, to which young professionals are sent around the world. In the words of one Andersen senior officer, to this day I have useful friendships forged at St. Charles with people across the firm in different offices, disciplines, and countries. If I need to get something done outside my own expertise, I have people I can call on who will do me a favor, even if it means coming out of their hide. They know I'll return it. Similarly, McKinsey's two-week training program for new professionals is renowned amongst business school students. As one of my ex-students told me, being sent to Europe for a two-week training program during your first few months with the firm impresses the hell out of you. It makes you think, this is a class outfit. It both also frightens you and gives you confidence. You say, boy, they must think I'm good if they're prepared to spend all this money on me. But then you worry about whether you can live up to it. It's very motivating. Unlike many of their competitors, all of the one firm firms tend to grow their own professionals rather than to make significant use of lateral hiring of senior people. In other words, in the acquisition of human capital, they tend to make rather than buy. This is not to say that no lateral hires are made, just that they are done infrequently and with extreme caution. A related practice of one-firm firms is the deliberate avoidance of growth by merger. In contrast to many other consulting firms, for example, McKinsey's overseas offices were all launched on a grow-your-own basis, initially staffed with U.S. personnel rather than on an acquisition basis. It's clear that this avoidance of growth through laterals or mergers plays a critical role in both creating and preserving the sense of institutional identity, which is the cornerstone of the one-firm system. Everyone grew up together. Related to this issue is the fact that one-firm firms tend to be more selective than their competitors in the type of business they pursue. It's been reported that an essential element of the Goldman culture is its calculated choosiness about the clients it takes on. The firm has let it be known, both internally and externally, that it adheres to certain standards and that it won't compromise them for the sake of a quick buck. Similarly, while Anderson has been an aggressive marketer, a property common to all the one-firm firms, Anderson appears to have taken a more studied, less opportunistic approach to business development than have their competitors. Consequently, one-firm firms tend to have a less varied business mix and a more homogeneous client or customer base than do their more explicitly individualistic competitors. This focus also encourages the teamwork. McKinsey, like all of the other one-firm firms, enters new areas, big or not at all. Anderson's strategy in its consulting work, the fastest growing area for all the large accounting firms, has been more clearly focused on computer-based systems design and installation than has the varied business of most of its competitors. Goldman has been notably selective in which segments of the investment market it has entered and has become a dominant player in virtually every sector it has entered. One of the fortunate consequences of the controlled growth strategy at one-firm firms and the avoidance of laterals and mergers is that these firms, in contrast to many of their competitors, rarely lose valued people to competitors. At each of the firms named above, I've heard claims that many of our people have been approached by competitors offering more money to help them launch or bolster a part of the practice, but our people prefer to stay. In one-firm firms, when people leave, they often go to join the clients, not competitive firms. Turnover at one-firm firms is clearly more carefully managed than it is amongst their competitors. Those one-firm firms that do enforce an up or out system, McKinsey and Anderson, work actively to place their alumni in good positions, preferably with the favored clients. McKinsey's regular alumni reunions, a vivid demonstration of his success in breeding loyalty to the firm, are held two or three times a year and go back a lot further than other firms have ever done. In part, due to the caring approach taken to junior staff, one-firm firms are able to achieve a very profitable high-leverage strategy, a high ratio of junior to senior staff, without the excessive pressures for growth to provide promotion opportunities. Compensation systems, particularly for senior officers, are designed to encourage intra-firm cooperation. Whereas many other firms make heavy use of departmental or local office profitability in setting individual compensation, i.e. they take a measurement-oriented, profit-center approach, one-firm firms tend to set compensation, both for senior officers and for juniors, through a judgmental process assessing total contribution to the firm. Unique amongst the large accounting firms, Anderson had a single worldwide senior cost-sharing pool as opposed to separate country profit centers. Individual senior officers shared in the joint economics of this whole firm, not just their country or local office. Hewitt Associates sets its senior officer compensation levels only after all senior officers have been invited to comment on the contribution, qualitative and quantitative, made by any other senior officer on their project and other firm-wide affairs. Vigorous efforts are made to assess contributions to the firm that do not show up in the measurable factors. In most professional businesses, particularly in those with a heavy emphasis on short-term results or year-by-year performance evaluation, Any activity that takes an individual away from direct revenue-producing work is considered a detour off the professional success track within the firm, and therefore it's avoided. This is not the case with one-firm firms. As the one-firm culture is based upon a team-player judgment system, approaches to evaluations and compensation, it is relatively easier, although it's never absolutely easy, for one-firm firms to get their best people to engage in non-billable staff-like activities such as research and development, market research, and other investments in the future. Anderson likewise invests in firm-wide activities heavily. For instance, it conducts extensive cross-office and cross-functional industry programs, which attempt to coordinate all of the firm's activities with respect to specific industries. Being collaborative, these cross-boundary activities elicit more success than they do in more decentralized firms. In fact, it is rumored, although no one has the statistics, that Anderson invests a higher proportion of its gross revenue in firm-wide investment activities than does any other firm. Communication in a one-firm firm is remarkably open and is clearly used as a bonding technique to hold the firm together. Frequent firm-wide meetings are held with an emphasis on cross-boundary, i.e. inter-office and inter-departmental gatherings. Such meetings are valued and clearly designed as much for the social interaction as for whatever the agenda happens to be. People go to the meetings. At most one-firm firms, open communications extends to financial matters as well. At Hewitt, they believe that anyone has a right to know anything about the firm except the personal affairs of another individual. At an annual meeting with all the junior personnel, including secretaries and other support staff, the managing officer discloses the firm's economic results and answers any and all questions from the audience. At Latham & Watkins, junior associates are significantly involved in all major firm committees, including recruiting, choosing new senior officers, awarding associate bonuses, and so on. All significant matters about the firm are well known to the associates, the junior staff. What strikes any visitor to a one-firm firm is the deeply held mutual respect across departmental, geographic, and functional boundaries. Cross-boundary respect is also achieved at most one-firm firms in part by the common practice of rotating senior people among the various offices and departments of the firm. Without exception, one-firm firms are led in a consensus-building style. All have or have had strong leaders who engage in extensive consultation before major decisions are taken. It is important to note that these firms do indeed have leaders. They are not anarchic democracies, and nor are they dictatorships. Above all else, leaders of one-firm firms function as cheerleaders who suppress their own egos in the name of the institution they head. Since their whole philosophy is built upon cooperative teamwork, consensus is more readily achieved here than it is at other firms. The willingness to allow leaders the freedom to make decisions on behalf of the firm was pre-wired into the system long ago, since everyone shares the same values. The one-firm system is a system. The one-firm approach is not the only way to run a professional business. But notice, it is a strategy. The mere fact that everyone adheres to common policies and practices is the thing that makes these firms successful. It's not their choice of markets, it's not their choice of services, but their adherence to a way of running their firm. It clearly is a very successful way to run a firm. The team spirit of the firms described here is broadly admired by their competitors and is not easily copied. As I've attempted to show, the one-firm system is internally consistent. All of its practices, from recruiting, through compensation, performance appraisal, approaches to market, governance, control systems, and above all else, culture and human resources, make for a consistent whole. This concludes the One Firm Firm, the sixth episode in my 14-part series, Strategy in Professional Businesses. Upcoming seminars in this series will focus on creating an adaptive firm, how companies should add value, and how to think about mergers, geographic expansion, and diversification. Today's seminar was based on a chapter in my book, Managing the Professional Service Firm, details of which can be found on my website at davidmaister.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.